I feel like every guy has thought in the head, wouldn't it be cool to own a bar or own a brewery, right?
Yeah.
I joke that Luke and I were just the people stupid enough to do it.
You're listening to Philly Who, the podcast that tells the stories of the doers, thinkers, and performers of Philadelphia. My name is Kevin Schmidlin, and today I am chatting with Trevor Hayward.
The idea of Evil Genius started around the summer of 2009.
About a decade ago, Trevor Hayward and Luke Bowen decided to start a business. The result was Evil Genius, a brewery that has tons of interesting flavors like guava, chamomile, and chocolate and peanut butter. But even more interesting is what they name their beer. So whether your favorite Evil Genius brew is Stacy's Mom, Ma the Meatloaf, or the latest ale, Baby Shark Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo, stay tuned for Trevor's story and the story of Evil Genius, now on Philly Who. Just a heads up, there is cursing in this episode. I drink no cider, but feast on Philadelphia beer. Now, while that's an accurate statement about yours truly, those are actually the words of John Adams, the second president of the United States. Adams coined that sentence while writing a letter to his wife in 1774, because even back in the day, beer was a huge part of Philly culture. In fact, breweries started sprouting up in Philly as early as 1685. At least, that's according to our fearless founder, William Penn. Trevor Hayward, on the other hand, was not planning to open a brewery in Philadelphia. At least, not as a kid, as he grew up on the east coast of Ireland.
I think my first thing was I wanted to be a TV presenter. That's what I decided I wanted to be.
TV presenter?
Yeah.
Wow. So, what does that mean?
As in, like, so the host of a TV show.
Oh, okay, okay.
Like,
yeah, we'll use a different word.
Okay, yeah. You know, it's so funny that even after 11 years here, sometimes I'll say something and like that, someone will go, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, what do you mean? What do I mean by that? Like, it's a word I'm using.
In Ireland, the slang is slightly different, and so is the education system. Here, you get into college based on SATs, GPA, extracurriculars, a cover letter. But over there, your admission to college depends entirely on your entrance exam.
I failed almost every exam.
Oh, no.
And I'm a smart enough guy. You know, I didn't get straight A's or anything like that the rest of the time, but like smart enough that there's no way that I should have failed anything. And so my parents kind of sat me down. They're like, yeah, you kind of fucked up here.
Yeah.
And so they're like, listen, because those final exams are so important, there's literally a type of school that you go to where it's focused on the final exam and maximizing your ability to take those exams.
Yeah.
I ended up in economics at UCD, which is University College Dublin. The moment I got there, I was like, I love this. I like joined every, we don't have fraternities the way you do here, but we have like societies, like the Commerce Society, there's the Law Society. They all throw like balls, like black tie balls, like once a year. So I got involved in all of that. I was like, this is amazing. You know, sit down dinner, open bar.
Yeah.
Drinking a lot.
Yeah. You know, yeah. The fraternities call that their formal.
Exactly. There you go. And so loved all of that. Got to know a lot of people. And that's also when I joined the radio station.
Yeah. So you got into radio. Is that just one of the many things you just were doing everything and that was one of them?
I kind of had that attitude when I started. I was like, here's all these things I've never done before and wanted to. Like, I joined the juggling club. I think I went to like one time and I was like, no.
Yeah. So you can't juggle.
I can't juggle.
But you tried.
I was like, I didn't even want to try like this thing, but like, I'm sure I could learn how to juggle, but I was like, you know what? No, yeah. I think I've got enough on my plate. And so I kind of did that with my schoolwork, although I basically would be there every day and never went to class. Yeah.
You just did all the extracurriculars.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, my parents must have thought that I was like the most studious student because I was there like 5 days a week, even days when I didn't have class, but I was just doing stuff with the radio.
Wow.
The entire time.
So are you still involved in radio in any way?
Not at all. After I left college, I moved to Australia. So it kind of left my radar as such, and I never got back around to it. Then other things came up that I was more passionate about, I guess, you know?
Yeah. So tell me about moving to Australia.
Yeah. So I finished school and didn't really know what I wanted to do in terms of career path. And I got an economics degree, but it doesn't qualify you to be an economist at the very least. And it certainly doesn't qualify you to be anything else. So I was kind of in a position, was like, do I want to go straight back and do like a postgraduate certificate or degree or whatnot, or do I want to like try and get a job? And I was like, a lot of my friends and people I knew were like, yeah, I got a job at this bank. I was like, that sounds boring as fuck. Mm-hmm. To backpack, essentially, you know, and I went on my own because none of my friends wanted to. Like, I would have gone with someone, but no. And I was like, fuck it, I'll go on my own, which was a big thing for me, given, as I kind of mentioned, I'm not the biggest extrovert.
Right.
So it really pushed me out of my shell. And at the time, my brother lives here in the States and has been here 19 years now. So he was living here. This is 2005. And so I bought an around the world ticket. So like I flew from Dublin, Philly, Philly, Hawaii, Hawaii, Sydney.
So you go to Australia just to backpack. And you're just looking to explore and see new things?
Yeah, essentially.
Gotcha. What types of things did you see?
Got to know a lot of people very quickly, because what I realized, and this was very much to my benefit as someone who's not super outgoing in that respect, is that there's lots of people traveling on their own. And everyone, even if they are traveling with other people, wants to meet new people. So it was really easy to like become friends with people. Like you'd be staying in a dorm and the people in your room would be like, hey, what are you up to?
Right.
We're going to the bar, or we're going out for lunch. And you'd be like, okay.
That doesn't happen anywhere else.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't happen at any other age, I don't think either.
Right.
So like everyone's similar age, like everyone's between, you know, 18 and 25 ish,
yeah.
You know,
and they're just down to hang out.
Exactly. Before I got to Sydney, I stopped in Hawaii. That was like my first stop. And that was the first place I was going to be on my own. Cause when I visited Philly, I stayed with my brother. And so I got there and I'm like, within a day, I was like, I hate this. I haven't talked to anyone and I don't know how to talk to anyone. And I think I called my brother and was like, I think I'm going to like change my ticket and see if I can get to Australia sooner. Like this sucks here. And then literally that night, the people in my room were like, what are you up to? We're going out to the bar. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, okay, so this is how this works. I ended up like hanging out with those guys for that week that I was there. And then I went to Sydney and I, at that point I was like, okay, so I kind of know how this works now, how to like get to know people. And so started looking for a job.
In Australia.
And because I was like, couldn't support myself financially the entire time not working.
Right.
And one of the first things I went on actually was a pub crawl. It was two Irish girls who sold me the ticket. And I was talking to them, they're like, yeah, they're always looking for reps. And I was like, that could be a fun job to do. Just, I mean, you sell tickets during the week and then go on the pub crawl and also get drunk with everybody.
So you bring people onto the pub crawl.
Yeah.
Oh man, what a gig.
So ended up doing that for a few months and then ended up being the manager of it and running the whole thing within probably 4 or 5 months.
What did you learn from running the pub crawl?
Dealing with drunk people. And it's part of my job again now. Sometimes I think it's funny. Sometimes like our staff will be like, yeah, we had a lot of drunk people tonight. I was like, well, we are a brewery.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it would be nice if they could cut themselves off a little bit sooner, but it's kind of going to happen, unfortunately.
That's what we make and sell.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So at what point was it time to leave Australia?
I loved it there. However, it was so far away from home. So that was one of the big things. And I was like, I didn't want to do that on a long-term basis. Like if Australia was as far away from Dublin as we are now in Philadelphia, I'd probably still be there.
You almost couldn't be farther away from Dublin.
I know,
Australia.
Right? Yeah. Antarctica.
Yeah, maybe the moon.
Yeah, exactly. And again, in my head, it was like a filler job. I was like, I'm only going to do this for a couple of months. And then 8 months later, I'm still there. I was like, oh, this sucks. I really need to like start thinking about what I'm going to do with my life. And then actually by the end of that year, the company, we could see the writings on the wall. The company was going to go bust. Like terrible management. Like I learned a lot of things there about how not to run a business.
What not to do.
Yeah. That's what Debbie and I say this to each other all the time. It's like that taught us, like as shitty as it was being in the moments there, it taught us all the things not to do.
Right. Isn't it funny how when you're doing stuff like throwaway stuff like that, you catch lessons that, you know, that stick with you when you're doing the thing that you're meant to do or really, really, really want to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I knew I was going to end up getting laid off. And what actually happened was my friend in Australia, Laurie, called me and said, hey, I'm taking over owning the pub crawl business that you used to run. Would you be interested in coming back for a few months and running it? And I was like, sure.
So you went back to Australia?
I went back to Australia for 3 months. This was the beginning of 2008. And at the same time, my brother had been kind of poking me saying, why don't you apply to Villanova for your MBA? That's where he went.
Yes. Yeah, so your brother came to Philly. Did he come to Philly to go to Villanova?
Yes and no. So when he was in college in Dublin, he met an American girl who was from Philadelphia and he visited her. That didn't work out. But while he was here, he was in one of those, before Uber and Lyft and stuff, you know, those share rides he used to do to get to the airport?
Right.
He was in one of those sitting next to a professor from Villanova who essentially convinced him to apply.
Wow.
So, and that's why I'm here.
I wonder who that is. I bet.
He was an engineering professor. No, Dave still knows him. My dad golfs with him when my dad
that's
visits.
That's good sales right there.
Lee Christensen. So he'd been here for 5 or 6 years. He did his MBA. And then the kind of couple of years after was like, hey, you know, you don't really know what you want to do with your life. Why don't you, would you consider coming and doing that? And eventually I was like, why not?
Yeah.
You know, I'd never had a huge desire, like nothing against America, but it has never been something I was like, oh, I should go and do this. Although fun story is that I went to a psychic when I was in Australia, and I'm pretty skeptical of stuff like this, but like most of the things that she told me actually came true. And one of them was that I would move to America and that I would start a business with a partner, which so kind of specific.
Now, when she said that, what did you think?
I was like, bullshit.
So you're convinced to go to Villanova MBA.
Yeah. So the GMAT is the test you have to take to get into grad school. And I actually took that in Australia.
Really?
Because I needed to get it done. So I was like, I'm here. Yeah. There's a center here to do it too, because it's an international recognized exam.
Right.
So did that, got accepted, and then also got accepted to be a graduate fellow. So essentially I would work for the school for about 20 hours a week for a couple of professors. They would pay for my tuition.
Oh.
And I got a stipend as well, like pretty small, but
right.
Enough to kind of live on. I mean, not really, but I was living with my brother, so my overhead costs were a little lower.
Yeah, I make it work.
Than other people, yeah.
So at no point so far have I heard any interest in beer.
I mean, beer was happening the time.
I mean, you were drinking drinking it.
Well, I used to go to this brew pub in Dublin all the time, and I loved trying their new beers.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, in Australia at the time, I know it's changed dramatically since then, especially for backpackers. Like, I was on a budget, like, we were not drinking good beer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was as readily available. Like, the craft beer renaissance that's happened in the States came a long time before the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Come on leaps and bounds, but still a lot of bars you go into and you're going to have Carlsberg on draft, Heineken, Bulmers, which is called Magners here, usually Spinnix. Bud Heavy as well.
Heavy.
Red one.
They call it Heavy.
Well, no, we call it Heavy.
Oh, you
here.
Call it Heavy. Yeah. Oh, okay. I like
that. You're getting some industry lingo.
Yeah. Hey, I love it. I want more.
Well, it's just a joke because it's the opposite
Bud Light
of light.
Bud Heavy. I love that. Yeah.
And a couple other ones, but like you wouldn't, light beer doesn't really exist, number one.
Right.
Coors Light sometimes.
And of course, Guinness and...
And Guinness and some other ones like that, but you wouldn't get like craft beers.
Right.
Certainly weren't. So the fact that there was an exception to the rule of this place. So that was kind of my first attempt into
And were you thinking
beers.
About making it yourself at that point? Or you just like knew that you liked learning these new tastes?
I mean, I feel like every guy has thought in their head, wouldn't it be cool to own a bar or own a brewery, right?
Yeah.
I joke that Luke and I were just the people stupid enough to do it. Actually, one of my first craft beers here was Magic Hat Number 9.
Yeah.
And that was when I was like, oh, beers can be really good, like really good. Like I would drink lagers, and it's what made me realize that I'd been drinking lagers like Carlsberg, Heineken, whatever for years and never realized that I didn't like them.
Yeah.
I was drinking because that's what everyone drank. And so once I got here and started seeing so many different options available, I was like, these are awesome. We used to do happy hour on Thursday after class. And I remember being at the bar and I overheard Luke talking to someone about how his ex-girlfriend's father owned a brewery and had thought about like buying it and like all these sort of things. And I was like, I'm going to talk to this guy because I like beer a lot and I would love to own a brewery. So that's where that first started.
Wow. And so was that the first time you ever spoke to him?
We met a couple of times because a lot of us are still friends together, is our first accounting class. And it was a career fair and I bumped into him at that and we just started chatting. And then because we would both be there relatively early in the day, I think we'd exchange numbers. And actually, funnier than that is that I lived in Collegeville. That's where my brother lives. And I was up at the Wawa there one night. And who do I bump into but Luke, which is really random because Collegeville is not really anywhere near Villanova.
Yeah.
But he was dating a girl who lived in Collegeville. So I bump into him there. I was like, this is weird. I keep bumping into this guy. And so we just kind of became friends pretty quickly after that.
Do you take the MBA while you're trying to decide what sort of business you want to start? Like, take me through how you got to the point where you actually were taking it serious.
I want to say that we really were taking it pretty serious from very early on. We didn't know what we wanted to do to begin with. And we were like, you know, Luke and I met and realized that we both were entrepreneurially minded. I had started a small business beforehand, actually when I came back from Australia with a friend from there. The premise of it was that when you get to Australia, you don't really have anything. Like you don't have a SIM card for your phone. You may not have accommodation booked and you don't really know the lay of the land. It was basically an introductory package. So people would have everything as soon as they arrive. As you'd get a SIM card, you'd get your first couple of
days. And you started this business.
Yep.
Wow.
It really didn't take off. And by the summer of 2007, I realized that it just wasn't working and I wasn't gaining the traction that I wanted. And my friend over there ended up getting deported. So I didn't have the person on the other end there. I didn't realize he was living there illegally. And having chatted with Luke, he was in kind of the same vein. He'd helped work on a couple of startups with friends. And we're like, well, why don't we like try and do something together? And so we started thinking about what those ideas would be for a business. And the beer one was clearly one of them. And we were talking about how that worked and all that sort of stuff. And we came up with a few other ideas too. There was green energy, housing that is very energy efficient, a few things kind of along those lines. But the beer is clearly our favorite one.
Yeah.
And summer of 2009, we actually sat down with three of our professors, one who's now actually the provost of Villanova. And surprisingly enough, the beer one actually came up tops.
Why?
Honestly, a lot of the reasons were ease of access to the market, and it was fast growing. So the potential there was greater than most of the other ones. And it didn't require the startup costs that a lot of the other ones would, because right. we had the option of doing what we did, which is the contract model, where we use someone else's brewery to brew the beer. So we didn't have to find a location, you know, get an architect, build it out, then get it all up and running.
Why did you and Luke become such good friends? What was it about your dynamic?
So Luke and I are very different from each other. So it's funny, sometimes people question how we are friends because we are so different from each other. But that's why, because we complement each other a lot. And there's very, very many, many ways where we're exactly alike as well. I never had like a best friend growing up. That was just not something I had. I don't know whether you did, or that's something I think a lot of people do have.
Yeah, I did.
He was the first person I think that I ever had in my life. I was like, oh, this is like my best friend.
Oh, okay.
You know, and so we became really close really fast in that respect. But to kind of answer your question, in some ways, I don't know why.
Couldn't tell you.
We just get along really well, you know? We still do. I mean, we fight like cats and dogs. Like, I make this joke all the time because we get asked sometimes to go and do like talks and talk about the business. And I was like, Luke and I are like an old married couple. Like, we fight about money and don't have sex. First time I did that, I told him I was going to do it and he didn't believe me. And he got so embarrassed in front of everyone. Like, he turned bright red. It was,
Oh,
it was great for me. I thought it was awesome.
So now at this point, you go through this exercise of deciding what business you and Luke want to start. You know that you want to go into business together. At that point yet, had you ever tried your hand, either of you, at actually brewing a beer?
Yes. So we both homebrewed at different times. He hadn't done it in a couple of years. He'd done it like throughout college. And I had, as soon as I got here and started tasting different beers, was like, oh, homebrewing, I've never done that before. Like, why don't I try that out? You know? So I hadn't been homebrewing for like 10 years or anything like that, but it was a cool way to learn how beer is made.
Yeah. How did you learn?
There's like a kit you can buy, and it's not that difficult to do.
You just boil it on your stove.
Basically, that's how you do it. So I was living with my brother and my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law was like, oh, it smells like dog food in here. Every time I'd brew beer. And I didn't do it that often, but it was often enough. But what I love about it in terms of a hobby, some hobbies, you can do the thing and not get anything at the end. You always have beer at the end. Might not taste good, but you'll have beer at the end.
Do you remember how your first batches tasted?
Yeah, the first one was awesome. The second one, not so good.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one was good.
Yeah, and that's, I think I was a little cocky after the first one. I was like, this is easy.
You just got lucky though.
Yeah, I think I just got lucky. We also realized that from a beer perspective that we didn't have the knowledge to recipe develop the way we would probably want to. And so we partnered with another guy at the outset there to help kind of fill that knowledge gap.
Yeah. You know? So then you decide to go into business, you decide it's beer. What are the first moves that you make to get started with this type of thing?
Well, the first decision we had to make was, did we want to build our own building? And we were in grad school, we were taking financial classes. We developed a financial model and realized, nope, that's a bad idea. I mean, not a bad idea, but we didn't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why we decided to go into business or start something for ourselves, is that we started in Villanova September 2008, 2 weeks into the program, Lehman Brothers failed and all of that stuff kind of shit hitting the fan in terms of the economy. And we're like, oh, I don't know if our job prospects are good. So that was kind of like the nudge for us to be like, we really should think about doing something for ourselves.
That's probably the best time in the past 50 years, the best week to start a MBA program, right? Because you might as well just sit here for the next two years and ride this out.
No, it's very, very true.
Wow. You know? Was there any anxiety about that for you?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was, in the sense that I'd moved there with the intention of probably going back home after I finished the program. Once you started to start a business, you're kind of making a different choice there. So I had to, you know, wrap my brain around that, number one, but I love it here and I loved it here then too. So that's why I ended up staying, you know, but it also created its own set of problems, because if I just decide I want to stay and go and get a job here, there's visa issues associated with that. There's no visa really designed for what we wanted to do for me to be able to stay. So we had a lot of issues with that over the years. Like twice I got trapped back home where my visa renewal was in process, but not approved. And like, it's awesome being 30 years old and back living with your parents.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And not knowing when you're going to get to go home
to your,
to your other home.
So you decide you don't want to build your own space at the outset.
Right.
So then where do you brew your beer?
Exactly. So I started like looking at and contacting breweries and asking them if they were willing to contract brew. And there are facilities that do that, but a lot of them were so large in terms of their batch size, and it wouldn't have worked for us.
So you contact the brewery and say, we want to make our beer, and they let you use their equipment.
Essentially, yeah. So eventually I found one, on like, there's like this brewery forum type thing. And they were a startup and they wanted to, because they're a startup, they knew they weren't going to be filling all of their tanks all the time. So may as well, you know, film with someone else's beer for some of the time. I look at the address and it's like South Bend, Indiana. I'm like, oh, and I look at the map. I was like, that's not that far. And then I like do the Google Drive. I was like, ooh, 11 hours. That's far.
Oh, man.
So, but that's the only place we could find in the time frame that we were looking for. Yeah.
It's where the Fighting Irish are.
That's very true. Yeah. The idea of Evil Genius started around the summer of 2009. And then within the next year, we started putting together kind of all of the different models and making decisions on what we were going to do, what we were going to name the company, all that sort of stuff.
How did you come up with the name?
This was such an important piece that we'd find names that I would like and Luke wouldn't, and vice versa. We'd find names that we both liked, but was already been used by either someone as their brewery name or as the beer name for one of their beers. And so being really careful, because I was like, we don't want to get sued, you know? And we're really struggling. So we're doing a lot of wordplay, you know, what does making beer mean? And like, we put ourselves, like you're mixing things together, put us into a laboratory, which got us to Evil Genius.
Wow.
And then the first thing, every time we come up with a name, we then look online to see if anyone's using it. And we're like, no one's using it. And we're like, what's wrong with it?
Yeah. Why isn't anybody using it?
You're like, you start saying it's like, oh, will people not like it because of the word evil in it?
Right.
You know? And so we did a survey monkey with our classmates and had a few other names, a couple that were just duds that I can't even remember. I know one of them that we did kind of like was Renegade, but Evil Genius won hands down because we got people to rate them on a variety of different criteria and stuff. And I'm glad we picked Evil Genius, not just because I think it is the superior name, but literally only a year later, another brewery started up as Renegade that would have been starting around the same time. So I guess we would have had an issue. So things worked out as they should have. Yeah.
So you start brewing in Indiana.
By the time we actually got everything up and running and they were building their brewery, so they hit their own delays as things naturally happened. So, because I think we met them towards the tail end of 2010. And the idea was that we were going to have like beer by the summer. And we didn't get to brew our first batch of beer till like August, just from delays and stuff. But we ended up only brewing with them for about 6 months. We got to the end of that 6 months and they thought that their brand was going to really take off. And we're like, I don't think we have space for you anymore. And we're like, well, fuck. And so we had to start looking for a new brewery again. And we found one in upstate New York in Cooperstown. It was the Cooperstown Brewing Company. I think they're still called that. But what's somewhat ironic is the place in Indiana, they actually a year later went out of business.
Wow. It's almost good that they got you out of there, right?
Yeah. And honestly, there was the brewer that they had there, like the two owners of the place were awesome. We still keep in touch with them. But the brewer they had was an absolute utter charlatan and has done this many, many times. Like he was making bad beer.
Wow.
That's the nicest thing I can say.
Yeah. Was he making your beer?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so when you tasted that, we were
having problems with it. Yeah. Wow. So they're telling us, hey, we can't brew for you anymore, was actually a blessing in disguise because it meant we had to move on.
Can you tell me about the first times you started actually selling the beer? Like people started buying it. Like how did that feel for you?
It was awesome. So because we were brewing in Indiana, we actually had some accounts out there, some wholesalers that were selling our beer. So the first time it got poured was actually in Mishawaka. So there's a bar out there. They were the first place that actually served our beer.
Were you there when they were serving?
Oh, yeah, we were there. It was September 9th, 2011. So we still live and breathe it. You know, I mean, I'm going on vacation, but I'll be checking email every day and I'll be fielding phone calls because you don't want the wheel to stop turning, you know?
Yeah. So you're hopping around from contract brewer. At what point do you introduce Evil Genius beer to Philadelphia?
So we introduced it immediately as well. So that was probably towards the end of September of 2011. So we had draft beer here and we start selling that. And it's really funny that, you know, in that first, between September and December, we do that like in a week now in terms of production.
What you did in that first September to December,
you
do now in a week.
Which is just kind of really funny. There are days when we brew more beer in one day just because the batch sizes are pretty big than we did in that 3 month period as well.
But I'm sure that 3 month period felt like so much beer, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're like, oh my God, you know, and we knew we weren't making any money at this point. Like we're certainly not paying ourselves anything, but we know that there's, you know, a means to an end. Like you got to grow it, you know?
Did you have a funder for all this?
No, we bootstrapped it. So we took what little money we did have and maxed out credit cards.
Yeah.
And I joke about this. I used to run this thing like an economy in a deficit. So I used to have a spreadsheet that I know what bills need to be paid, but I know exactly what was in the bank account. And as soon as a check would come in for, you know, our things, I go, okay, I'm going to pay this one, but not this one, because I know they're not going to call me till next week. That's just how you have to do things sometimes. Yep. You know? But eventually, like, it was nice to put away that spreadsheet one day and go, we don't need this anymore.
Wow.
You know, but
how did Philly respond to the introduction of Evil Genius beer?
lackluster, I think, probably, actually, because, you know, there's so many other great breweries and, you know, a lot of people, especially like in the industry, saw us as like, well, these guys aren't even making the beer. There is like a stigma against contract brewed beers.
Yeah.
Not as much as there once was, but certainly there was then. But it's kind of funny. A lot of people don't realize what beers are contract brewed. Like Sam Adams, that's how they started.
They were contract.
Yep.
No way.
Brooklyn beer, still contracts.
Wow.
And their beer tastes great. You know? So my attitude is, I don't care where it comes from. Does it taste good?
Right.
You know, and that's how I judge anybody else.
Yeah.
Because I've tasted a lot of beers from people who have their own breweries and they don't taste good.
Yeah.
But so I'd rather drink something from a place that tastes good.
Yeah. Yeah. Who cares? That's really what it comes down to. Taste is king.
It did give us the opportunity to focus on the sales and marketing aspect of our business because we weren't worrying about, you know, this piece of equipment breaking down or getting up to actually be the brewer that morning and whatnot.
Right.
And I think we do a good job of marketing. So yeah, if you want to call us a marketing company, I think I'll take it.
Now you had a background in like economics. What was Luke's background?
Sales. So he did a communications, was his undergraduate degree.
So how the hell did you two get so good at marketing?
So I would like to say that number one, we have just a natural talent for it. So that's me patting myself on the back, definitely. But then equally, having been in Australia and running that pub crawl, and the person, Laurie, who invited me back, I learned a lot from her about how to run and market things.
What types of things did you learn?
When we first introduced the beers, they didn't all have these quirky names like they do now. We had very traditional names and it wasn't really working that well.
What kind of names?
Like our first beer was called Good and Evil. Our first IPA was called Evil IPA. Mm. Are you sensing a trend here?
I am.
So our third partner, Mark, wanted to move to Florida with his family. And we're like, that's not really going to work for us. And he's like, yeah, I don't really know that I want to do this anymore. So we ended up like buying him out. He was very reluctant for us to make a chocolate peanut butter beer because he'd been making one at where he worked because he still had his full-time job. And I got that. And we were like, you know, we get it. You don't want to like be stepping on toes.
Yeah.
But when he was no longer with us in that respect, I was like, we're free to do whatever we want. So we said, let's make one. And I can't remember whether it was Luke or myself or probably both of us said, let's give it like a really crazy name and see if what that does. And so that's Purple Monkey Dishwasher. And I put a press release together for it and sent it out to a few places. And so no one's tasted the beer yet. And no one's even seen what packaging looks like or anything. And sent that out. And we had our highest web traffic day ever. I was like, we're kind of onto something with this.
You're like, Purple Monkey Dishwasher.
It's actually from The Simpsons. It's an obscure reference. It's right. Like from an episode in like from Deep 1992.
Right.
The PTA disbands and it's like a whisper down the lane thing.
Yeah.
Skinner, Bart says to someone at the top of the like line of people saying, Skinner says the teachers are going to crack any minute. And by the time it gets to Edna Krabappel, she gets whispered, Skinner says the teachers are going to crack any minute, Purple Monkey Dishwasher. And so I've been saying it for years as kind of like a non sequitur just because I thought it was so funny and dumb.
Yeah. Like, was there any hesitation? Yeah. Because that's a far cry from the more, like you said, regal, like Evil IPA type thing.
Well, we kind of figured like, it wasn't that the other names weren't working at all, but I was like, we're not standing out. There's just so many competitors. Like, let's try something really off the charts and see if people appreciate that. And maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Yeah.
And it's kind of snowballed from there and it's gone and meandering in different directions. And now that we have the bar in Fishtown, we have a lot more names that we've to go through. And I have a lot more flexibility because when you're picking names for something that's going into like bottles and be on shelves, like you really have only so much space that you're going to be able to fit these words. So I can have like much longer names at the lab, which is fun for me to do. And I get to throw ones in there like every now and then because people expect to know the reference.
Mm-hmm.
And when they don't, they like Googling it. But every now and then I'll throw one in there that's not a reference to anything. I'll just make something up.
Like just keep us on our toes.
Yeah, I did one called out, maybe Y2K is just late. And so people thought that this was like,
what is this from? I haven't seen that movie.
I haven't seen that movie. Exactly. And they're like, I don't know where this is from. I can't find anywhere. I was like, yeah, I'm just fucking with you all. So you have to find fun in your job, you know? So
yeah,
that's where I find mine. So
right.
Quite soon after that, and I think we already had this in play, like we came up with the plan was to have a beer called Stacy's Mom. Don't get me wrong. You can have the best names in the world, but if the beer inside the bottle doesn't taste good, it doesn't matter. And the reverse is also true. Like you can have the best beer, but if you don't have a good name, people aren't going to pick it off the shelf. Around that same time, we didn't have a brewer for probably close to 8-9 months, maybe a little bit more. We met John, our brewer. And John had just finished at Tired Hands. He had been the brewer there at their cafe. And he was looking for something new to do. And we're like, well, we don't have a full-time job yet because we don't have a brewery. But we need someone who can do recipe development. Like Purple Monkey Dishwasher, Luke and I developed together. But I was always very nervous about developing new recipes because we didn't know what we were doing. We kind of knew, but not enough.
Yeah.
So he took all our recipes and changed them and made them better.
Right.
You know, so he took the good recipe of Purple Monk dishwasher and made it excellent.
Yeah.
So he started working with us at that point in time, and then eventually became full time later that year as we started like looking for buildings and things like that.
Do you remember when you first walked into the building that is now Evil Genius?
I do. Yeah. So actually John was the one who found it. He found this realtor somehow, and they went out one day and went all around kind of the Fishtown area looking at buildings. And then John sent me a list of them, and he goes, I really like this one. And I looked at it, I was like, I actually kind of like that one too. And it was like falling apart.
Yeah.
So like, you did have to have some kind of vision for these things. But yeah, you get in there and I'm like, it's the perfect amount of space, because we kept seeing places that were either too small or too big. And it was like just right in that respect. We bought our building for like $450,000. The building right next door to us, which is similar size, the guy who like, he just doesn't really do much with it, but he was just saying that he got it appraised for $1.6 million. The building required a lot of work, so we still had to spend a lot more money on that. Yeah. Like, it was being held up internally by scaffolding because the roof was going to cave in.
Whoa.
I think we had to replace 30 to 40% of the roof. We were able to retain most of it, but a lot of it had to come out and we had to put new stuff in. But
did you feel nervous at all about this? Because that's quite the project, right?
Well, I'm always the optimist, and if Luke was here, he would agree with me. He's always the pessimist. Like, kicking and screaming buying that building. Like, every time we would go there, he goes, no one's going to want to come here. No one's going to want to come here. I was like, no, they will. They will. And I think we were both right to a certain extent. We've been very fortunate. It's been nice and busy. We are a little bit off the beaten track in terms of like, there's literally nothing else on our block. We're the only thing.
For now.
For now. Oh, I agree. And we're getting a Steven Starr restaurant on the corner, I've heard.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We are the yin and yang in that respect. So if he has that like negative opinion, something, I'll go the other direction to balance him out.
It sounds like that's a huge part of your success is the relationship between you two.
Definitely. 100%. We both know and trust each other to make good decisions on the things that we know more about. But at the same time, like, I will question the shit out of him about things and vice versa, whether we should do things. And that's also been one of the reasons why I think we've been very successful. Yeah.
Just a quick touch back on the naming thing real quick. Do you have a favorite name so far?
There's so many. I mean, I still love Shut Up Meg.
Yeah.
I love
that
one.
That's from Family Guy.
That's from Family
Guy. I know that one.
But every now and then, like, there's just ones that we literally have a Slack group where our employees can suggest names. And we have a Dropbox in the building for suggestions for beer names. We did one last year. And in fact, my lawyer was like, you really shouldn't do that. He says that to me a lot. It was what are you wearing, Jake from State Farm? Everyone got that one.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I was like, you know what? Actually, we probably could. He's like, you really shouldn't name like
State
actual
Farm.
Companies. Yeah. I was like, you know what? It would have been probably just as funny, or maybe funnier, if we said, what are you wearing, Jake from Generic Insurance Company? There's probably ways for us to be clever and not maybe do things like that.
Yeah.
You done messed up, AA Ron. I like that one.
There's one beer that like that somebody will just absolutely love, but like their best friend next to them might not have seen that movie, and they have a different one that they love. And I think that's just what's cool about it, is because they're so like thick. Some of them are such deep cuts that like you really, really got to love whatever the thing is.
No, that's very true. Exactly. Like, this comes back to, we were talking about my childhood. This is where me watching so many movies and TV shows growing up, this is where it comes from.
Right.
I can now justify all of those hours I spent not playing football and stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. I was market researching for being in the beer industry.
How did it feel when it finally opened?
Good. Although I have one regret, is that when we opened our doors at like 4 o'clock that day and like 18 people streamed into the building, instead of being down there and getting to watch it, enjoy it, I was too busy trying to get something done, like something dumb up in the office. And so that's my one regret of that. But at the same time, whatever I did need to get done probably did need to get done at some time, maybe not in that moment. But it was awesome to then walk down and be like, oh, there's like 20 people here and it's like 4:05.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So did that, got that approved, took a while, there was some back and forth and whatever, but those are for, I think it's 3 years. And it came up for renewal. And even when I'd first gotten it, I'd gone home for Christmas and I was under the impression I was going to get that pretty quickly soon after that. And it didn't. So I was like stuck there for not very long. It was maybe like 3-4 weeks. This time though, my grandfather was sick back home. So I flew home in November. The visa had expired, but technically when you have a new visa application process, you can stay in the country and work. There's no issue there. But because I left and I was like, it's going to come any day. That's what the lawyer says. Get home. And they actually denied the application, even though this was just looking for a renewal on something that I already had. So we go back and forth and I'm like, this sucks. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. This is the beginning of 2016. So I'm in Ireland, back childhood bed.
What?
Yep. I was chatting with people via Google Voice and they didn't even realize I wasn't in Philadelphia. So we were able to maintain the company running to a certain extent. I mean, I couldn't open the mail anymore, like dumb things like that. And my brother helped with stuff like that because I was still living with him. So that was very appreciated.
Yeah. Were there any moments that you thought that either the brewery or the business were truly in jeopardy?
The business, not so much, because I think we could have managed to make that work. But the fact that we bought this building and wanted to renovate it and didn't have the money to do so. So that was kind of coming to a halt as such is that was scary.
Yeah. What would you say has been your favorite and most triumphant moment so far?
The first time I saw our beer on the shelf in Wegmans is probably one of my proudest moments. Not that it wasn't on shelves in other places already, but that took a lot of work and that's such a big company. So to be sitting on there on the shelves there, that was like, okay, not that we've made it, but we're getting there. Yeah. That was definitely one of the things that I was like, this is awesome. We're progressing in the direction that we want.
Yeah.
You know,
what is the Philly brewing scene like? Because we've got like over 25 breweries in city limits.
Yep.
Is there any community around that?
Absolutely. I mean, we're part of Philly Beer Week, which is part of Philly Loves Beer.
Yeah.
And so I know most of the other breweries, whether it's their owner or one of the like general managers or whatnot from that organization, but we're all very cordial. Like, I mean, John, our brewer, left Tired Hands, but they borrow malt from us at times. We borrow stuff from them. Like it's,
yeah.
And we do that with multiple breweries. So the industry is very cordial in that respect. I mean, it's competition though at the end of the day too,
right.
You know, but at the same time, I think a lot of us see it as our competition isn't each other necessarily. It really is to grow people out of drinking light lagers from InBev and drinking local and better tasting beer from people like us.
Right. The rising tide raises all
boats. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Do you have any advice for someone who's looking to get into home brewing and hasn't really touched it recently?
Well, because as I mentioned earlier, what I do love about home brewing is that you always get something at the end of it. So, and it is a lot of fun. It's interesting to learn how something like that goes from start to finish. And yeast is the most amazing thing in the world. We don't even realize it, you know, is that it can take sugar and make us alcohol.
It's our best friend, really.
It really is.
They say that dogs are men's best friend, but it's really yeast.
Yeah. I mean, if you could bring yeast for a walk, I would, you know.
And if your dog could make alcohol for you, that'd be great too.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That'd be probably better. From the perspective of the beer scene, what's the biggest challenge facing Philadelphia today?
I mean, and we see this everywhere. Local is becoming much more important, which is great. And the Philly beer scene has changed dramatically because it's always been a really good beer scene. But 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was more import driven in terms of good beer.
Right.
And so that has changed a lot, you know. And I also think, you know, we're seeing a lot more breweries opening up. I mean, when we decided we wanted to be in Philadelphia, there wasn't 20 breweries in Philly. There was maybe 5, 6. I can't remember the exact number.
Yeah.
So that has changed dramatically. And that's a good thing as well. And I think it helps for everyone because we see this people coming into our place that have come from another brewery because they like visiting multiple breweries on the same day. So it's changing in that regard as well.
What are some of the trends that you're seeing now that you think is next up?
Actually, interesting you should ask that because we're going to be doing some of these as well, is that I'm sure you've seen the advent of hard seltzer.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to have a line of our own coming
out.
Hopefully by the end of the year, we're developing all of that right now. That is super exciting. It doesn't really cross over with beer. It's not quite the exact same beer drinker.
Right.
It skews younger. Skews more female.
Yeah.
And it's more less liquor, less wine.
Yeah.
So that's a big new thing that if you'd asked me last year, I was like, that's a fad. I think that one's here to stay because people are very calorie conscious.
Right.
I was just reading this article the other day and basically what it says, if you want to understand what's going to happen in the alcohol beverage industry, look at the non-alcohol beverage industry. And what we're seeing is over the past few years, like the LaCroix of the world.
Right.
That's what people want to drink instead of drinking things with sugar in them.
Right.
And so that's really interesting to look at that. Specifically within beer, I mean, hazy IPAs have become this huge thing. Again, a lot of people thought that that was going to be a fad because we went through a lot of phases of different IPAs. Black IPAs were really hot for a minute. Then it was Belgian IPAs.
Yeah.
But the hazy New England IPA seems to be one that isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what comes out next. I mean, these low calorie IPAs. In fact, John, our brewer, just brewed one. Because he's like, I want to try one. Dogfish Head has one that you can go out and buy like in cans and whatnot. I can't remember what it's called. But John, our brewer, was like, I want to try brewing one. He's like, it might be awful, but do you want to give it a go? I was like, sure, let's try it.
Hell yeah.
100 calories. He just pulled some out of one of the tanks just before I got in the car to come here. And I tasted it. I was like, it's actually really good.
What?
It's like 4.2% or something like that.
Wow.
It's 100 calories.
And it tastes like an IPA.
And it's, yeah, it's got the hop character.
No
and it
way.
Doesn't, it's not too bitter. Usually you need that malt in there.
Yeah.
To balance out those hops, but it tastes really good.
I think that was the first trend that I recognized being a young alcohol consumer, is that when I like turned 21 and really just on the advent of craft beers, IPAs were so bitter. Like I remember, yeah. And I don't know if this is just me that remembers this or if this is actually true. Like you'd take a sip and you'd kind of like, whoa, and you just like very little sips for the whole pint. And I feel like that's not really the case anymore when you order an IPA.
No, I think there was a time where the type of IPAs were very bitter focused and people have pulled off of that. So the actual bitterness level has diminished and it's more about the flavor and aroma.
Yeah.
But also your palate has become more educated. Fair. Or, you know, and that's definitely a thing as well. Like when Sierra Nevada, like I know I've heard a lot of people say this, I wasn't around then, you wouldn't have been around then either. When Sierra Nevada came out, they're pale ale. So this is, I want to say either very late, I think mid 80s.
Right.
People thought this was the most bitter thing in the world. I drank that today. I'm like, this isn't bitter.
Oh yeah. You crushed like eight of them.
Yeah, exactly. But that's where people's palates just didn't know how to react to that.
Right.
I think we've all become a little bit more accustomed to that and generally has slightly more alcohol. Like there's a few different criteria, like there's what it's supposed to be, but all of these, you know, there's beer styles and style guidelines, but they all just got made up in the last 50 years.
Right.
Or maybe a little bit more. Like there was no beer styles like in the 1400s.
Right.
People were just making a beer.
It was just beer.
Exactly. So we always have to take that. Like when someone says this isn't brewed to style, I'm like, yeah, someone made that up in the last 100 years.
Right. And it's probably going to change in the next 5 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just all like these lines where they're just moving.
Exactly. Exactly.
For more on Trevor and Evil Genius, you can head to podphillywho.com/evil or just check out the show notes. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow along on Twitter and Instagram at PodPhillyWho. We'd love to hear from you. And you can join the email list at PodPhillyWho.com. Here's a very special thanks to Philly Who's patrons. Sam Schwartz, Josh Koppelman, Bob Moore, Alex Hillman, Vanessa Generelli, Ryan Fitzgerald, and Matt Glick. If you'd like to join them in supporting the show, you can do so at patreon.com/PhillyWho. Philly Who is a Q9 production. This episode was recorded in the Philly Who studio, powered by CIC, and was hosted and produced by me, with associate production by Angela Gervasi, Lauren Hunter, and Jackson Neal, editing by Max Graham, artwork by Lauren Carhart, and a very special thanks to Sergio Delgado. For Philly Who, my name is Kevin Schmidlin. Till next time.